Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 269. As always, you can drop us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is, of course, This Show Is So Gay. And you know what? Every now and then we tweet. Not so much, but you can follow us there. Go to the Facebook. That's where it's all going down. Type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. Two amazing guests for you this week. We must get started with the first. Josh Robbins is an HIV-positive activist and a blogger and a volunteer and a change agent and oh so much more. Through his simple motto, I'm still Josh, you still be you, he offers inspiration to the masses in a manner that is uniquely suited for this social media age. In 2013, he was named to the POS 100, celebrating unsung heroes who are using their voice to make a difference in this world around HIV and AIDS. And now he's here with us. Josh, welcome to The Show Is So Gay.
Well, thank you. What an introduction that was.
We have so much to chat about, sir. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm definitely ready. Thank you so much for having me and inviting me on. I appreciate it.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. You very much live your life in a public eye in a way that not a lot of people do. Do you have that sense? Do you feel like I put myself out there?
You know, I do, and I think I realize it when I have something really big or important to say, like just in my... It's funny for me to say normal life,
right?
You know, just like normal things that happen, and then I share it and no one cares. Then I realize, like, oh, well, I guess they're kind of like burn out a little bit on the Josh this week.
Is there such a thing as Josh Robbins burnout? I can't imagine.
Yeah, my partner has it all the time.
Is it treatable?
We hope so.
Okay.
Hopefully you'll get a cure.
Any day now.
I told him, you know, if my partner wants a cure from Josh Robbins' burnout, I'll be happy to give him a cure. You know what I mean?
I feel like we're doing relationship coaching right now. It's very exciting for This Show Is So Gay.
Yeah, well, The Show's So Gay, so I thought we should, you know, is for sure talk about that.
Yeah.
And all kind of good things. But seriously... No, you know, so much now is, I didn't intend, and I never wanted to be, I call myself an activist, I guess, now, but I never considered myself that. And still now, sometimes, really don't even consider myself an activist. I just feel like that I've gotten a really cool platform, and people like to get on the blog and hang out, it seems, according to the analytics. And I've met some really cool people and been inspired myself, and so if I can continue to, you know, meet those people on social media or on the digital space that say that maybe they find something on my blog that's helpful or, you know, inspirational, or that they in turn can, you know, offer me, I get a lot of inspiration from the people that I meet. And then, I'll continue and it makes sense. And there's still like a space for me in the whole HIV arena online.
Well, let's talk about your story. I was doing my research on you, and I write out my questions, as I would normally do each week for the past 7 years, and then I reread them just a few hours ago, and I was kind of annoyed by even what I wrote, cause just the first question, because I was going to ask you about, you know, your life before January of 2012. And I just felt like even in asking you about that, I didn't mean to put out there that you were a completely different person. And I feel like that's such a part of your message, that you are the same person. But I would imagine that that's something that you get a lot of your life pre and post testing positive.
Well, let's just be honest. You know, my life isn't the same.
Yeah.
And that word still, I'm still Josh, was as much for me really in trying to, you know, give that self-validation as it was a message that I wanted to portray or kind of shout out to the world that I'm still me, even though, you know, I'm living with HIV now. So that motto, I'm still me, you still be you, where it started was a place of honesty for me and a place of really desperation.
Mm.
I live in a town in the South. Arguably, the South is not the first usually to, you know, walk down that equality road.
Right.
Or not be judgmental. We just do it a lot politer, in a more polite way in the South. We always say, you know, bless her. And then we, you know, throw out the insults. But I came up with that because it's how I wanted to feel.
Yeah.
I wanted to feel like the same person. I wanted to feel like that although my body was going through an insane change at that moment, that people could still call me and not call to ask how I was feeling or how I was doing in regards to HIV, but would still call me because they want to, you know, go grab a beer after work or a cocktail or something. And so that's where it started. It started in that place. And now, you know, kind of fast forwarding 2.5 years later, where I feel like that I've done way too much talking a lot of times and not enough listening. And I've, you know, neglected sometimes making my own health priority. Because I still have all the same fears and same questions that everyone else has.
Right.
And that's living with HIV. Every time I go to the doctor, like right now, I'm on pins and needles because I, you know, went and got blood work at the end of last week, and I'm waiting for, you know, the viral load and for my CD4 count and all those things. So I go through that same thing that everyone else that's living with HIV goes through that's in treatment, but I'm not still the same person.
Yeah.
You know, I've never talked about HIV so much in my life as I have in the past 2.5 years. That's different. I used to get really, really bothered by the small things in life, like literally the small things. Driving to work and somebody cut me off, I'm going to let them know about 10 times with my middle finger that they cut me off.
Right.
That's the Josh Robbins, not to talk about myself in third person, but that was me 2.5 years ago. Now it's not even a conscious decision anymore. It's just, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Money used to be, for goodness sake, I'm a talent agent by profession. So money has always been very important to me. You know, in the past 2.5 years, it's really maybe not as important as it used to be. So there are things that have changed, but by saying I'm still Josh, you still be you, what it really gets to in essence is that I want to be a part of your life if you want to be a part of mine. And nothing's changed, really. I still like to go out. I still like to party. I drink too much. I have Crown and Coke too often. But I'm also somebody that's very conscious now of the things happening in the HIV community, issues that are really important and topics that no one else really cares about as much as those that are kind of in our circle.
Yeah.
So
let's talk about that piece that makes you accessible in a way that a lot of other activists are not. And by the way, I'm not going to let that fly anymore of you even questioning whether you're an activist. An activist is someone who uses their voice to make a difference. That's kind of what you do on a daily basis, Josh. So enough of that, my Southern friend.
Well, you know, the thing is that when I hear the word activist, my mind goes to someone in the street,
yeah,
with a megaphone, and when people say brave, people have called me brave in the past, and when I think of brave, I think of, you know, a soldier on the field, you know. So I think it's semantics a little bit, but if the message is getting out there and it's connecting with people, and my message is actually pretty simple, I mean very simple, I think, and if that is continuing to help people, then great, then all this work on this website that I'm not a web developer that I've learned how to do, you know, is worth it maybe.
So in December, and you chronicle this on your website, in December of 2011, you had sex with someone who believed that they were negative. And in the course of that event, there was an unprotected period during that encounter. In January, you developed a fever and flu-like symptoms, did a test for HIV, and then somewhere in there, right before you were to do a confirmation test for HIV, you decided, you know what, I'm going to film this.
Yeah.
Talk me through that.
Well, I was a part of the HVTN-505 vaccine. And if you remember, probably, I guess, 1.5, 2 years ago, it got canned by the government because more people that had gotten the vaccine became HIV positive than people that got the placebo.
Hmm.
Now, it was statistically insignificant, so it's not linking the vaccine to the transmission or infection of HIV. But putting that aside, I had kind of taken an oath or a promise or whatever you want to call it, that when you are a part of a vaccine study, I had to commit to only being tested for HIV within that clinic. And the reason being is because hypothetically, if I had received the vaccine, there was a possibility that I would have antibodies present in my body that would kind of trigger one of those quick tests, the swab, the mouth swab test. So I'd committed to that, but what that also meant was is that if I had had a HIV scare, I guess, where I needed to be tested and wanted to be tested quickly, that I had to wait for that clinic to be open. And so it wasn't at the availability of being able to just go anywhere, anytime, and pick up a quick test or go to a walk-in clinic and that sort of thing. Now, theoretically, I probably could have, because ultimately I found out that I was a placebo recipient, so I didn't even receive the vaccine.
Okay.
But that's the kind of the commitment that you make. All of that is important because it tells of kind of my timeline. On December the 18th, when I had sex with the best person of my life for that night, a one-night stand, we did use protection. And then through the course of that, the condom came off and we had unprotected intercourse for less than 5 minutes. I tell people that and they always roll their eyes, but I promise it wasn't more than that. I think actually 5 minutes is way more time than it was because we got interrupted. Someone knocked on my door at my condo, one of my friends. So that person that I fell in love with for one night.
For that night, yeah.
Yeah, you know, was out the door, and that was that. Anyway, when I had gotten sick, I went to one of those minute clinics, and, you know, one of those drive-by clinics you can go in anytime, and I wasn't feeling well. I felt like that I had the flu. You hear that a lot. They gave me some medicine for the flu, and I went home, and I took it. And the next morning I woke up and I had blisters all over my mouth. I felt terrible, night sweats and all that good stuff. And so I marched my happy ass back in that doctor's office to let them know whatever they had given me, I was allergic to and they needed to lock it up and get it together. And I'm so embarrassed now. I've never gone back. But, you know, the doctor came in after the nurse kind of, after I really kind of gave it to the nurse. And she and the doctor came in and he said, you know, I really am concerned and think that we need to talk about your sexual history and the risk that you've possibly taken recently. And when he started talking that way, my heart dropped to my stomach and I kind of started shaking. And I don't remember a whole lot more of what he said. I know that I did tell him, I promise you that I'll go get tested. I can't get tested by you because I'm a part of a vaccine study, which he didn't understand. And I literally had to kind of gather my stuff and get out of there quickly because I felt like that he was, you know, one of those guys that wanted to test me. And he wanted me to, if it was going to be positive, he wanted to kind of be the one to turn in that result. Like right. He found one, you know. So through the me calling, and that was on a Friday, so I had to go the whole weekend until Monday.
The worst.
Get in. Yeah, and I wasn't feeling well. I mean, again, the flu-like symptoms, I could barely talk because I had so many ulcers in my mouth, and the night sweats and all that stuff. I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell my family or my friends. I told nobody kind of what was going down at that moment. And I was scared to death. And those are moments that I haven't really shared a lot of in my blogging or in social media or online. And I mean, I was broken from the bottom to the top of me. I mean, I was literally broken. I mean, there were sobs and nights that I would fall asleep on the floor because I had been crying. And after I was tested on that Monday, which seemed like an eternity, then you know, I was very friendly and close with the vaccine staff, and they knew what was going down, and of course they were very reassuring. But it's also their job to not tell me that I'm positive if I'm not, and to not tell me that I'm going to be okay if I'm going to have a result that's positive.
Right.
And so I went back for them to do a confirmation. In my mind, they tell you that you can't take anything from a confirmation test or a second test because the lab that they sent it, it could have dropped the initial vial of blood, or it could have been tainted or spilled, or the test could have been, you know, not readable. And so, you know, you hang on to these moments of, well, maybe that's all it is. Maybe, you know, whatever reason. And you make all these promises to God. I made more. I promise God if I get out of this type promises in that 3-week period than I ever have in my whole life before.
Okay.
And so through all of that and kind of that 3 weeks of me being able to deal with this on my own, or really the lack of being able to deal with this, I made a decision that when the time finally came for me to go in and get the actual final result, that I would record it, audio record it and make this video. And I did it for two reasons. One, I wanted to remember that moment for myself.
Mm-hmm.
If in any miraculous way that I got a result that I was still negative after going through all that stuff, and granted, I did more internet searches in that 3 weeks than you probably have your whole life.
Yeah.
It was crazy. I mean, I wanted to know everything that I could about any possibility of what this could be except HIV. And if it was HIV, I wanted to know if I had every symptom or kind of where I was. And so I was doing all that research. And then my mom is a registered nurse. She's an RN. And I'd made the decision that if I went in and got the result and it was a positive result, that I would immediately tell my family.
Okay.
And I'm not talking about tell my family on the phone. I would, you know, travel to my hometown and tell my family eye to eye so that they could look and see me and hug me and feel me and just know that I was okay because they were seeing it in my, you know, in my eyes. And I knew that if I went home that day, my mom would bombard me with a million doctor questions.
Right.
And so instead of me trying to remember everything they said or all that good stuff, I had recorded it for that. And so those were the two reasons. And then after I launched the blog, imsojosh.com, I guess it was like a week and a half or 2 weeks after I launched the blog, then I remembered that I had that video. And so I kind of edited it together and put it up on the site and thought maybe this might help somebody. And it turns out people have told me that it's the only one of its kind on YouTube.
Yeah.
And, it's been viewed, I forget how many times it's been viewed, probably, I don't know, 30,000 or
oh,
something.
Oh no, it's a lot more than that, my friend.
It's been crazy, and it goes through, YouTube goes through periods where they feels like everybody watches it or not. Yeah, it's on up there, like 42,000
yeah.
views. But on the inside, what's interesting is that people, you know, I have a bunch of videos on YouTube, and I'm one of those analytics nerds that I want to know, am I retaining people? What's my viewer retention, you know, in videos? That one, people watch the whole thing.
Oh yeah, and we will link up to it for folks so they can link directly to it. I don't know how you could not watch the whole thing. And there is a part where you're kind of hoping as you watch it, and we can deconstruct this, you know, till the end of time. Of well, maybe he was wrong. You know, maybe that's not what the result is going to be. Even as you kind of know watching it, well, this is what you're going to see. And so there is that part of, we're just there with you, Josh, and we're standing by your side, and that you've given people that access is kind of remarkable. Even in our social media age, it is pretty remarkable. I don't think there is anything else out there like it.
you know, I'd never been told, I was 29 at the time. I'm much older now, and wiser, but no, I was 29 at the time. And one thing that stuck out in my mind in thinking back on that day was that the first person that I ever learned and was told that was HIV positive that I knew or that was near me was myself. I'd never been told at 29 years old as a gay man, an out gay man in the South. I'd never met an HIV positive person.
Yeah.
That I knew that they were positive.
Yeah.
No one had ever told me that. And so hearing those words, you know, that it was a positive viral load, seems so clinical, but it also seems so personal.
Yeah.
And I feel like that video, and that audio in that moment, you know, kind of shares exactly what my world was about for that 3 minutes.
Yeah.
I will tell you now on a funny note, totally against the hospital, like, regulations to be recording a video and audio. I did not get clearance from the physician that I recorded, which is a big no-no.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, but I also, it was a moment where I wanted to ask forgiveness instead of permission. And because at that time they didn't have posted signs, and in Tennessee, we're a one-party state, so as long as one party is privy to the conversation being recorded, then you can record it.
Okay.
And so I made that, like, legal determination on my own and stood up to the lawyers. But because I didn't show anyone else in the video when I was walking through the hospital and didn't violate anyone else's privacy, then they let it stay, but they certainly let me know that I was not to do that again.
Okay.
I'm like, all right, Vanderbilt, I gotcha.
They have made it clear to you.
Yes, but they were very nice in saying, you know, it's a message that I think is important, or that they thought was important, and so they let it stay. But I did, you know, go head-to-head against some Vanderbilt lawyers, and I won.
Gosh, it's just one of those. I mean, we're talking about a 3.5-4 minute clip. It just makes such a difference just in watching it. And again, it's that access point for folks. And I have no doubt it's provided comfort to many and opened eyes. It's incredible. It's incredible. Hey, we got to talk about PrEP. And I got to be honest with you. We have barely talked about PrEP on the show, and we've been quite remiss in that. And so you are one of those great people that we can talk about PrEP with. I'm actually nervous, Josh, that there are any number of people listening who don't even know what PrEP is. It came up briefly when we had Tyler Curry on a few weeks ago. But you have a pretty definitive stance on PrEP, which I appreciate. Talk to our listeners about PrEP.
Well, first, let me give a disclosure. I'm in no way, I'm not a doctor, and I'm not a scientist or a researcher. I am just a guy that lives in Nashville that blogs about HIV because I'm living with it. So the stuff that and my opinions on it, it's certainly not guidance for anybody. Those are all legal disclosures that I am required to say. But I definitely have an opinion about it, and I think that research, you know, there are tons of places that you can go, and one of them on my site is I have an LGBT PrEP guide, and it's easy to find. It's just PrEP, P-R-E-P, prep.imstilljosh.com, and it is a complete guide, and it actually, even though I am way 100% in favor of PrEP as a prevention for HIV, the guide is unbiased.
Yeah.
And because I hired a journalist. I hired a journalist named David Heitz, and he is he's a well-known, well-respected health journalist. He writes for he does articles and journalism for, like, Healthline.com, the LA Times. I mean, on and on. This guy's resume is insane. But I hired him because I wanted him to do 3 different stories about PrEP, and the good, the bad, the ugly, the honest, and then just report it and then allow the readers to make a decision. And so there's links within that guide from everyone's perspective.
Yeah.
From, you know, Michael Weinstein, who is the leader of AIDS Healthcare Foundation, who is adamantly against the use of PrEP. I mean, he is by far pretty much a lone ranger.
Oh yeah.
Like the longer that we wait and kind of wait this thing out. But there's also a ton of others that opine about PrEP and about its use and that sort of thing. So with all that disclosure and kind of information provided, also that PrEP guide is Health on Net certified. So it's HON code certified, which means that it's accurate health information, and that is a process that I went through and an accreditation I went through because it was important to me to provide accurate health information, even if it's, you know, stuff that maybe I do agree with or don't agree with. So anyway, with that said, PrEP to me, gosh, where do you even start? It's a no-brainer. If I would have known about PrEP, well, it wasn't approved. I don't think it may have been approved. I don't even know when it was approved.
It was pretty under the radar a few years ago.
Yeah, if I would have known about PrEP when I was HIV negative, I would have been on PrEP in a heartbeat. And certainly knowing now, everything that I do and really understanding HIV at a way different level than I did 2.5 years ago or 3 years ago, I would definitely be one of those candidates that should be on PrEP. And I'm not saying, and when I say candidates, I'm talking about an HIV negative gay man.
Yeah.
We can go through saying, well, you know, once you kind of get into that circle of deciding which HIV negative gay man is the best person for PrEP, then you also start alienating people, and then you also start name calling, you know, with words like promiscuous or
right.
risky activity and that sort of thing.
Irresponsible.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, good grief.
Yeah.
It's being honest, you know, like all sex is risky and irresponsible and promiscuous at times, you know? And so I'm a big supporter of the use of PrEP by the right people. Now, with that said, I am much more of a supporter of people just being able to have a conversation and not be judged. Meaning, go to your doctor, talk to your primary care physician, and talk about PrEP. And we're talking about PrEP Truvada. And talk to them and make the decision with you and your partner or whoever is important or, you know, that decision making. And then no matter what you decide, you have my support. All I want you to do is talk about it.
Have a conversation.
And have a conversation. And that's something that I put up a PrEP, an open letter on PrEP to the LGBT community, just saying, I don't care if you support PrEP or you don't support PrEP. We all need to support conversations happening at the patient-doctor level.
Yeah.
We need to get people into their doctors to have that educated discussion. And then whatever decision's made, it's also how I feel about condom usage, you know. I'm not someone to judge people. So, you know, if you have all the information and then you make an educated decision, from there, I'm not going to judge you. And I think it's also probably why some of the most quickly judged members of the gay community, like, you know, gay porn stars, why I've really bonded with several of them through, you know, digital and social media. And I'm not talking about just watching their videos. I'm talking about, like, interacting,
right.
engaging with them.
I assumed so.
Yeah, I know. I was just putting off for all the dirty time, you know, or whatever, you know. That's the best way to approach PrEP, is to disclose that we aren't doctors and we're not researchers, and there's a ton of information that we don't know, but what we do know is how effective it is.
Yeah.
And for me, and this is something that I've taken some heat for, I think it's when the nice days for Josh ended, and it was pretty recently ago, is It's when I published the story that I hired the health journalist to investigate, which is, why the hell do we not have a condom that's approved for anal sex?
Right.
Condoms aren't. They've never been tested by the government, by the FDA. And for me, all of this information about PrEP couldn't come at a better time, because the one prevention tool that I have, you know, been held to the stake since I've been having sex was to wear a condom. And so with my, you know, raising questions just about, well, why haven't you ever tested it? And why haven't you approved it if that is the prevention method? I just think that because of all that, the PrEP comes in a fantastic time.
Yeah.
Now, with that said, PrEP is not, it's not an either or. You don't have to choose condoms or, you know, taking a pill in order to protect yourself. Being honest with yourself and each other, it's just something to add to that toolbox, and it's something that you could possibly say either or you could say, you know, a combination of everything. Whatever comfort level you are at in protecting yourself against HIV, you know, you're not going to be judged. You just need the information and then make the decision.
There you go. There you go.
Let's finish on this note. And I got to tell you, there's just so much stuff we're not even going to get to. So with your permission, we need to have you back on the show, because we're not even going to get to the digital encouragement wall and all the other cool things you're putting out there. So there's a lot to chat about. So you're coming back on the show. So I'm telling you that right now. I was posing as a question,
okay,
but now I'm just telling you, you're coming back. Give us... I would imagine with the life that you lead and the social media presence that you have, and you hinted at this earlier, that you really do have these folks reaching out and just thanking you. Give us one story about one of those out of left field contacts that just kind of made you pause.
I think any time that someone has reached out to me and has thanked me for my blog when they were contemplating suicide,
yeah,
as the only alternative to living well with HIV, which would be to just kill themselves, those are the moments that my heart stops. And still, you know, it's probably happened 5 or 6 times that someone's reached out to me and said that, you know, they just found out, they think their life is over, no one's going to care for them. They have the same exact thought that I did at the very moment when I found out, is anyone ever going to love me?
Mm.
Am I ever going to have sex again?
Yeah.
So those have to be by far those moments, those 5 or 6 moments when somebody's contacted me and said that they were contemplating suicide. I had a call probably a month and a half after I started my blog from somebody. It was a random phone number. I don't know how they got my number, except that, you know, it's not that hard to Google me and you find my number.
Mm-hmm.
And the person said that they had just found out a couple of days ago, and they literally were on the verge of contemplating or attempting to commit suicide. And they read something on my blog that said, tell one friend. That's all you have to do. Just tell one person, whoever that person is, just tell them right now. And that's what they did. They said that they listened to my advice or what I said in the blog, and they went and told one person. And as soon as they told that one person, they felt like the weight of the world was almost lifted off their shoulders.
Yeah.
And I've not talked to that person since, and I don't know where they live or who they are. But I tell you that also, gave me an insane sense of responsibility, not to continue the blog, but to respect the platform,
yeah,
that the blog has, and respect the, opportunity. And the reason why I started the blog was because there was nothing else. I searched, man. I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find anything like the blog that I have now. And I felt really lonely. And so I know that if I felt that way, that there were other people that did as well. And it's been true. Last month, the blog, again, it does, just so you know, the blog doesn't monetize. I don't sell ads on it or anything like that. I do some sponsorships of like events where I offer the space in return for like a sponsorship of the event, but mm-hmm. no money's exchanged or anything. But last month, the blog had like 215,000 page views in
wow.
a month. The month before that, it was like 200,000. And so people are going to the blog and they're staying there for a while and they're reading stories. And a decision that I had made, I had to make it real soon, was that one, I didn't have enough material to like keep people interested. You know, if I could take it all back again, I would not name the blog I'm Still Josh, besides talking in third person, which is kind of weird to me. You know, that blog, the way that I set it up, it was, you know, my story, blah, blah, blah. Well, gosh, I can only talk so much, and people can only hear so much about me. And so I immediately started opening up the blog, and that open invitation remains. Anyone at any time can come to me, and if they want to share their story, as long as it's honest, and at the end, there is some type of encouragement, which is what my message is about. I'm just about offering encouragement to people that are newly diagnosed. If they can do that, then that's what the blog's there for. And as long as I can continue to pay for the plugins and the hosting and the domain each year and all that good stuff, then we can keep it going.
There you go. There you go. Well, look,
yep.
After 260-something episodes of this show, we are about nothing, and people hear me say it week in and week out, we are about nothing if not someone using their voice in their own unique way to make a difference. And that is what you are doing, sir. So that is 100% what you're doing. I don't really understand the concept of Josh burnout. I don't think it's a real thing. We'll call your partner off the air and we'll have a talk with him about it, because anybody who goes to imstilljosh.com, and we will link up to all of the amazing content you are putting out there, what you are seeing is one man putting his story forward, one man creating a platform for people to interact, to get more information, to hear a voice. And it's a very valuable thing that you're doing, sir.
Well, much respect to you, and thank you for your time and for your listeners.
All right, folks, and we are back with our second amazing guest for this week's episode. Ryan James Yezik is a Los Angeles-based filmmaker, activist, and content creator. His unique vision, combined with his passion for equal rights, led him to create Second Class Citizens, a feature-length documentary about discrimination based on sexual orientation. He also founded the nonprofit organization Love, Don't Hate as part of a continuous worldwide effort to spread love and eliminate hate. And as we mentioned last week, he organized the National Gay Blood Drive just a few weeks ago. Ryan, welcome to the show, It's So Gay.
Thanks for having me.
So much to talk about. As our listeners know from, you know, hearing me rant about it for the past 7 years, blood drives are kind of my big thing. How can we create change here, Ryan? What led you to create the National Gay Blood Drive?
Well, first of all, kind of your thing in a good way. You like them?
I want us to be able to give blood, Ryan. That's all I want in life.
Yeah, that's the right attitude. And so do a lot of gay and bisexual men such as yourself. And so that's sort of what inspired this. I want to be able to donate blood. And so when I realized that I couldn't, that sort of is what started the documentary. Not completely. The documentary has multiple areas of discrimination that it covers, but as soon as I realized that I couldn't donate blood, I felt the effects of discrimination based on sexual orientation personally.
Yeah.
And that sort of, once you feel like you're something of another species for no reason other than the fact that you're gay, you kind of, you know, it changes, it moves something in you. And so I went on to do the documentary. When I couldn't find what I was looking for, which ultimately was some sort of interaction with FDA, some sort of verbal response from them, just a chance to kind of ask some questions that they don't cover in their MSM section on their website. When I was unable to do that, that led me to organize the National Gay Blood Drive, because that at the time, which was about a year and a half ago, that's all I really could do at that time. And so that was last year. We did it for the first time. And then after I continued my journey even further, I realized this year that we had to do it again. And now here we are, you know, trying to get 100,000 signatures on our petition, you know, proving to be quite a challenge. But we just finished this year's drive, went amazing, and now we're kind of seeing what's going to be next.
I don't accept the phrase, it went amazing. I want to hear more. How great was it for you to organize this? It was in so many different locations. It expanded its reach so much from last year to this year. You had to be flying a little bit that day.
Yeah, it was a lot different this year, because last year it was sort of us setting the stage and then having people come in and take it a day of and just help us. And this year we started a lot earlier and it was more organized. You know, we did it through the nonprofit that you mentioned earlier, Love Don't Hate. And so we were able to raise some money to put it on. So it just had more of a, you know, an organized, cohesive, branded effort this year, which allowed for more people to get involved. I haven't mentioned this yet, but we had donors, eligible allies donate in the place of the gay and bisexual men who can't. And so that allowed for a lot more people. It was a more welcoming event.
Yeah.
And so, now we're accounting for our totals and we just crossed 2,500 participants nationwide and I want to say 1,200 units of blood donated, so which can save up to 3,600 lives.
Yeah. And a heck of a lot of awareness, too. I feel like every time I talk about this, you know, if I write a piece about it in the Huffington Post, no matter what I do about educating more folks or just ranting about gay men not being able to give blood, it never fails that someone posts, oh, I had no idea.
Absolutely. That's one of the biggest reasons why we do this, is because to raise awareness. And raising awareness increases pressure on the FDA. The more people know about it, the more pressure they feel to do something about it. There are so many people who don't know about this ban. And so it's always nice to inform them and to educate them on the fact, especially if they're a gay and bisexual male, that, you know, they can't be a part of this life-saving process that everybody else can.
Yeah. Yeah. Ryan, I'm not going to lie, and no pressure, but I'm counting on you to give me a little bit of hope. I feel like this is one of those issues, you know, I've been fighting against for a decade on various college campuses and just in my own life, and you just feel a little bit stonewalled by the FDA, that there isn't a lot of traction. I am counting on you to tell me that these policies are going to change.
Yeah, it is inevitable that they will change. That's the sort of bright light, you know, that we're going towards. It will change. The question is when.
Right.
And that's sort of what we're trying to expedite. You know, some people will say that, you know, this policy could have been changed as early as the year 2000. So here we are, you know, 15 years later almost, and it still hasn't been changed. So, you know, it's hard for me or, you know, just the average Joe to say, like, oh, it should have been changed at this time, or it should be changed, you know, it's hard for us to talk about the science of it.
Right.
And we can talk about what scientists say, we can talk about what the American Medical Association says, we can talk about what the blood banks say, and that's what we are doing. We're taking all of this data and all of these statements that people directly involved with the blood collection process, and we're saying, this is what they're saying, this is what they're saying. That FDA, you are the only one still saying that this ban is necessary.
Right.
So how can this be, you know?
Right. What's next? So the petition's going on. Talk to us about the petition, and what would happen if you get the requisite number of signatures?
Well, the hope with the petition is that President Obama, his administration, would comment on this ban, which they have yet to do. In fact, I don't know that any president since the ban was implemented has commented on it. So, you know, it's like you said, not a lot of people, there's always someone who doesn't know about it.
Right.
And we feel like the president's administration having to comment on it could shed a lot of light. Now, like I said, that's our biggest asset is being able to raise awareness and spread the word about it.
So what should folks do? We obviously have to share this petition by and large, right? So at the time of this recording, you know, we need 76,000 more signatures. And let's be very clear, 24,000 that you've already gained, that's no small number. That's pretty impressive right there. How do we go about getting the other 76,000?
Sign and share, sign and share. That's what I keep telling everybody involved. You know, it's like you said, the 24,000 is a lot. And, you know, we hope we can get to the 100,000 goal, but as many as we can get, we'll be happy with and proud of. And, you know, if we don't do it this time, we'll have to try again. But we haven't given up hope. We still have about 9 days, including today. So
yeah.
You never know what can happen in that amount of time.
Quite a
so
bit.
Find and share is the main message.
Quite a bit. Now, we are a changey, hopey show, so we're not about the pushback, but we should probably acknowledge, I would imagine that you've encountered some pushback as you put this out there. I know that anytime I talk about this, I get all the kind of really passionate emails from folks I don't know saying that I am seeking to contaminate the blood supply. I would imagine somewhere along the way you've encountered some pushback.
Only in comments, and the only pushback we've gotten, a couple of blood donation centers themselves, but it's in the form of just, like when we were planning the event, we had one blood donation center just completely not respond to us, and we think, you know, they just weren't comfortable having it there. It was in North Carolina, and then another blood donation center in Fresno, California was super skeptical about having us there, and they thought it would disrupt the flow of the regular donors. And so we ended up having it there. That's the great part. It was not easy. And then the only other form of pushback has been in the form of article comments. You know, you'll see a big publication post something about it, and you'll get a lot of comments, and those posts, you know, many of them are negative, or honestly, most of the comments that are negative are just flat out inaccurate.
Right.
So, you know, they like to say, you know, you'll contaminate the blood supply and you'll do this. And it's like, you know, the blood supply is already at a risk for being contaminated. And, you know, more healthy donors could contribute to the blood supply, and it could become safer if we change these policies. So they don't really know what they're talking about when they say kind of these unfortunate things in the comment sections. But that's the only form of pushback we've seen. The only other thing is Westboro Baptist Church, after the fact, kind of took a stance on the issue last year via social media. So that's about it.
Okay.
We are seeing initiatives and joint resolutions and any kind of, you know, what was it? Pittsburgh passed a joint resolution and I want to say April. And then it was that news that sort of led me to the council member there and one of our drive leaders, Dan Berta, whose husband passed away and couldn't have his organs donated because of, you know, they wouldn't take them because he was gay. And so these stories we've been watching, we're all paying attention. Part of the blood drive is the fact that a lot of these different entities, a lot of these different people, organizations are coming together and working together to change those policies. So that's sort of been the amazing thing, is seeing all of these initiatives come to life and the ones that already exist come together.
Nice. Nice. Now, are we planning for another one next year?
So what happens after the blood drive is just complete exhaustion.
Yeah.
There's a few weeks. It's a lot of work done by, you know, a few people. Like, all in all, we had, I want to say, 300 total leaders across the country, which even with that number, I'd say, you know, maybe half of them were active or like took a substantial role. So I would say, you know, there's usually 1 to 3 people per city that are super, you know, doing a bulk amount of work. And so we have to rest for a little bit. But, you know, if it goes like this year went, I can already anticipate another one next year. With each year, it seems like they're getting a little easier with more people involved and taking on larger roles. But, you know, we're growing. And so the hope is that we'll do it again next year, especially if the policy hasn't changed.
What do you have to say to our LGBT allies, folks who are in the community who don't put this at the top of the agenda, where this just falls by the wayside to marriage equality and some of the issues we talk about week in and week out on this show? How do we get this more present even on our own agenda?
That's something we have had challenges with, getting it on the radar of LGBT or gay and bisexual men especially. It's hard because people don't always see it as a right like they do certain other situations. And you know, this isn't just blood donation. This is all the areas that aren't marriage equality. They have a difficult time getting the attention they deserve and the change that they need. But I think, honestly, we're just going to keep improving and altering our messaging and our branding until we find a way to reach as many people as possible. I think it's a growing process. I think as the event grows, the support for it grows. And I think a lot of the issue in the past has been that the only option has been the only option available has really been to boycott blood drives. And I think this new sort of let's have a blood drive and let's invite everyone to it and let's do this sort of positive, progressive, even more effective thing, I think that's been resonating with people. And I think word of mouth and grassroots messaging has been a big part of our growth. So I think the more we do it, if we do it again next year, I think we'll continue to grow and hopefully, in effect, get on more and more people's radar.
Yeah. No, it feels like such an active response and such a positive response to bring attention. You know, the boycotts, which I've been involved with the boycotts and banning them from college campuses, that never feels good. You know, I get the point of it never feels good. And then you have the whole contingent of, in particular, the gay male population that would advocate, oh, well, then just lie and say you're not. And,
right.
And that doesn't
That's
feel good.
Response. You know, and the boycotts, I'm not, you know, not knocking them. You know, I feel like the boycotts were necessary. I think, you know, you take steps. And even last year when we did the blood drive, our whole thing was attempting to donate. Like, it was that we wanted to show that we could, and it wasn't as welcomed by everybody, and not everybody could participate, especially allies. And so you have to do certain things to evolve and to get to the next step. So I think, you know, they were necessary. I think now we can do it. I think now what we've found is there's a way to do it that we can both create change and, you know, get the policy changed and also include a lot of people that have sort of we've suggested turn away in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Where can folks go to learn more about all of these efforts?
You can go to gaybloodrive.com to learn about all of everything we're doing. You know, that's sort of our information hub. And the petition's there, gaybloodrive.com. They can access everything.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, when I read about it, when I heard colleagues in other parts of the U.S. Participating, we most certainly wanted to have you on. It's such an important issue to me. This is discrimination on a cellular level, and it just feels altogether different to me than marriage equality. And I'm not knocking. You know, everybody's got to have their issues that they want to fight for, and blood donation doesn't find its way on the agenda. And so I so appreciate you and all of your fellow volunteers. I know it wasn't just you, but knowing how hard you've worked and all the other volunteers across the country, what an amazing effort that you guys have put on. And so we urge everyone, we urge you to stroll on over to gayblooddrive.com, sign and share the petition, because this is one of those issues. This is a life-saving issue where we really can make a difference, and we want to, but to be denied that, it hurts.
It does, yeah, you're absolutely right. And thank you for giving me the chance to talk about it and talk about what we're doing and help grow what we're doing.
Awesome. Ryan, please keep doing what you're doing, sir.
Thank you.
All right. right. We only have a few minutes left on this week's episode. There's so many stories that we really don't have the chance to talk about. We can touch on them super quick. A federal judge ruled just this week that Colorado's 2006 voter-approved ban on same-sex marriages violates the Equal Protection and Due Process Clauses of the U.S. Constitution, which would seem like immediate good news, but as we've been covering with all of these marriage equality decisions in the past few weeks, this decision as well was accompanied by a temporary stay until August 25th, meaning that same-sex couples in Colorado cannot marry until then. So it gives opponents the chance to appeal. So we will see if the appeal is then filed. The ruling did not address the continued issuance of marriage licenses to same-sex couples by a Boulder County clerk. That's still going on over there. It's quite fascinating. We love when individuals take action and are creating a real difference, which is happening there with the Boulder County clerk. On the other side of the aisle, Marco Rubio has jumped headfirst into conversations about gay marriage. He gave a speech on family values at the Catholic University of America in Washington. He said this, quote, "There is a growing intolerance on this issue of gay marriage, intolerance of those who continue to support traditional marriage. Even before this speech is over, I'll be attacked as a hater or a bigot or someone who's anti-gay. This intolerance in the name of tolerance is hypocrisy. Supporting the definition of marriage as one man and one woman is not anti-gay. It is pro-traditional marriage," end quote. This is from the Florida Republican senator and potential 2016 presidential contender. Let's read that last part again. "Supporting the definition of marriage as one man and one woman is not anti-gay. It is pro-traditional marriage." So now what we're doing, folks, is playing a game of semantics. We can stand up and say, yes, we are not for equality, but that doesn't make us anti-gay. Sure, we'll give you that, Marco Rubio. You are not anti-gay. You are just anti-gay people having the same rights as everybody else out there. But apparently that doesn't make you anti-gay. I don't know about that. And finally, in their annual assessment of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender characters in Hollywood movies, GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, said this week that they could only find four significant LGBT characters in 43 action, science fiction, and fantasy films monitored last year. By contrast, 8 of 19 comedies and 5 of 28 dramas had such characters, which then makes the action and fantasy genre, by GLAAD's count, a weak spot for such diversity. Kind of a bummer for people like me, for whom science fiction and fantasy, that's our escapism, as it is for so many different people. So Comic-Con is about to start, and Comic-Con in San Diego is extraordinarily gay-friendly, but apparently last year, only 4 significant LGBT characters in 43 action, science fiction, and fantasy films. So, as we talked about last week with Marina Rice Bader, if you're in a position to make some gay content, make some gay content in films. People really want to see it, and it's not getting made. That wraps things up for this week's episode. We have such a fun episode for you next week. We are joined once again, it's been well over a year, by Sharon Staple, the executive director of the Anti-Violence Project. Just one of my favorite people to have on the show. We're going to, again, try to get at that nitty-gritty of what is it that we can do to stop violence in our society, as LGBT people are disproportionately targeted for such violence. So that's coming up next week. So excited for that. For now, you guys get out there. Go do whatever it is that you do to make a difference in this world. Whatever it is that you do to use your voice to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters, whether you're starting an online petition, whether you're starting a blog, whether you're filming your life, whatever it is that you do to use your voice best, please get out there and make a difference. And remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?